Today's guest is Alana. She is in Nicaragua, and we felt that it was really important to have her on the show because she is in the middle of some big political upheaval with the Nicaraguan government. And so we invited her on the show to talk to her about what to do in a situation like that.
And I know we're very U.S.-centric sometimes in this small community, and it's really important to pick our heads up and look around at what's going on at other places in the world. And I know I've read a little bit online about the situation that was going on right now in Nicaragua, and hearing her story about what she's going through right now is just crazy. Her whole life essentially changed just a few months ago. So we're so excited to share her story with you, and we're so inspired by her. Oh, and keep in mind with the audio that she is calling us from Nicaragua right now. So please be a little patient with that. So let's go.
Welcome to Fire Drill Podcast, where side hustles, savings, and creativity lead to financial independence. With your hosts, Gwen from Fiery Millennials and Jay from Millennial Boss.
All right. Well, thank you, Alana. We're so glad to have you here today. Can you please provide our listeners a quick background on yourself?
Hi. Yes, I am so excited to be here. Thanks a lot for the invitation. So my name is in Spanish. It's Elaine Miranda, and I'm from Nicaragua. For those of you who might not know where Nicaragua is, because I know it's sometimes it's hard. It's in Central America. And I've been blogging about personal finance for the past 6.5 years. My blog's name is Plata con Plática, which basically means silver with chat, I would guess. So the right translation would be something related to blogging and finance.
You're in the right place then.
I think so.
So where did your personal finance journey start?
So I actually, it's kind of funny because I was in Taiwan back then. I started in 2012 and I was doing a master's degree and MBA in Taiwan. And I have a finance major, so all of my professional experience had actually been in corporate finance. And around 2010, 2011, I felt like I wanted to do something different. I wanted to do something more personal, but I still liked numbers and I still liked my major. So nobody was blogging or writing or even talking about personal finance back then. And since I went to school in Mexico for my major, I did follow a lot of the people who wrote in Mexico and newspapers in Mexico. And that's how I discovered really personal finance. And once I discovered that nobody was doing it in Nicaragua, I basically just took it up on myself and say, you know, if nobody's doing this and it's so important, then why don't I do it? When I went to Taiwan at the end of 2011, a couple of months later in 2012, I just decided to give it a go and start and see how people, you know, we're going to react to it. And it's been amazing.
How has your journey impacted your personal financial situation? And I guess, what were your goals previously and what are your goals now?
Before, I was never really a mess, I would say, in personal finance. I would say that I handled them well, but there was really not a goal. I guess my goal back then, and I was also very young, was to, you know, live from paycheck to paycheck, stay out of debt, have enough money to go out and travel, and that was it. So when I started writing about personal finance, reading about personal finance, and, you know, listening to the problems that people had around personal finance, I discovered financial planning. So a lot of my life now revolves around planning and now around organization and around thinking about the future and not just reacting to how things fall into your lap.
A proactive track instead of a reactive one.
Yes, that's a good way to say it.
So we wanted to bring you on the podcast because we saw posts that you posted into a personal finance online creator community. So FinCon is a conference that Gwen and I go to every year for people who are either doing podcasting or blogging or some other medium about financial stuff. And you posted about the situation down in Nicaragua and how now more than ever, having a personal finance plan is extremely important to people who are going through the situation. And to be honest, I hadn't even thought about personal finance in sort of that context. So can you talk more about specifically what is going on? And we'll dive more into that next.
Yeah. So for the past almost 3 months, it's been 85 days. We've had a very, very rough, difficult, complicated time in Nicaragua because a lot of people have been killed. We're going through a very tough crisis and it's a political crisis that has turned into a social crisis that has turned into an economical crisis. And it's all because basically the people are against the government. And we basically have a dictatorship here, very alike the Venezuelan government. And he's been in power for the past 11 years. Funnily enough, supposedly the Nicaraguan constitution doesn't even allow re-election. But this guy basically changed the constitution so that he could re-elect himself. And he's been in power for the past 3 terms and counting. So on April 18th, or a couple of days before, he decided to pass on his own, a reform to the national social security system, where basically people would have to pay more and receive less. And even elderly people who were already retired were going to have to get a cut of 5 or 10% on what they were getting. So this was like the last drop that spilled the glass of water, and people, we are still tired, and protests started. And the protests were, the government tried to silence those protests very violently, and a lot of people have died since then. Almost 350 people have died. To give you an idea, Nicaragua has a population of only 6 million. So when we say 300 and something people, it's a lot, right? And basically, because of all of these, 250,000 jobs have been lost, again, in a population of 6 million. You know, the active population is around 2 to 3 million. So 215,000 jobs lost is a lot of jobs. A lot of companies have had to shut down. Everything related to tourism, restaurants, entertainment, and even, you know, big companies like banks and every kind of company really have had to either shut down, reduce their personnel, reduce their cost to the maximum expression. And this leaves people basically without an income and without, you know, any exit out.
Jay, did you have any idea this was going on?
I knew it was going on, but I didn't understand the cause. Elena, can you tell us a little bit more about what the average person in Nicaragua, what their plan was financially? Like in the US, for example, a lot of people, they count on Social Security, and the boomers and previous generations, they really didn't necessarily save as much towards retirement because they were counting on that to help them, and pensions from their employers, for example. What was the kind of the financial political climate for the average person prior to this?
So to give you like a little bit of background on this, Social Security systems do work differently here and in the US. So yes, most of the people do count on Social Security, you know, from the government, but we don't have any kind of private or optional ways of saving. We don't have any 401k, for example, or 403b or any of those things that you guys have. So here, the way it works is that there is, the same as in the US, a table that basically tells you, according to how much you earn, a percentage of what will be taken out of your paycheck. In Nicaragua, you need to have worked for 750 weeks to receive your pension, and you can get your pension at the age of 60. But obviously, there's a big but, there are some other variables involved. So, for example, here in Nicaragua, minimum wage is around $200. Some sectors even receive a little bit less than that, and that would be minimum wage. But the basket of goods costs around almost $400. So people, you know, the poorest part of the population were earning a lot less than they actually needed just to cover their basic expenses. And there was no clarity on how the government was handling the money that they were supposed to be saving, or that you're supposed to be saving for your Social Security. So there's no transparency, there's no accountability, there's nothing. And for the past, you know, 6 or 7 years, the national security system has actually been in debit, and the resources are more scarce and scarce. So the projections from the World Bank were that the national security system was going to be broke by 2021. Leaving us all without a pension. So on top of this, you know, when the government decides, they basically decided for this measure precisely to try to solve the problem. The problem was that they did it on their own, and because it's a corrupt government and they've been stealing, you know, much of the money from the people, on top of them stealing, they try to raise how much we have to provide every month, and then give us less money once we retire. So that was what they started.
So I know you have dedicated, I don't know if this is your full-time job, but you've dedicated a lot of your life to spreading personal finance awareness. And I saw that you have a massive following. I think you had over 50,000 Facebook followers, which is incredible. So right now, are you spreading certain pieces of financial advice to the masses down in Nicaragua? Sort of what are you doing in the middle of this?
Yeah, so this is actually what I do for a living. Once I came back from Taiwan in 2013, I decided to give it a try and see if I could live out of, you know, blogging and out of personal finance. It was a challenge because there was nobody, like not one person living out of blogging in Nicaragua back then. And so it took me around a year to actually make a living out of this. And now that the crisis has been going on for the past 3 months, it's really hard, honestly, to provide advice because none of us has been through a situation like this. I, as a personal advisor, have not been through this. And the people losing, you know, massively their jobs have definitely not been through this either. So I actually asked on FinCon a couple of weeks ago, we were going to go on a national strike for a day. We're actually having a second national strike this Friday as a way to pressure the government. And I asked on FinCon, you know, what would your advice be to people? And nobody answered. Like three people from Latin America living in the U.S. were the only ones to answer because they understand a little bit of what's going on. But their response was, I'm so sorry for what you're going through. And I have no idea what to say. So it's honestly really hard. And what we're doing is we're living literally day by day. Every day is different. Every day something happens. Every day there's an attack. Every day somebody loses their job. Every day, X amounts of companies close. And so I try to write both for people who have small businesses and on what are the different strategies that they can, you know, take either to try to maintain their business or legally what the steps are if they need to close the business. And I obviously also provide a personal finance advice for, you know, regular people who are not business owners, but who have either received a pay cut or they are out of jobs or they are in huge amounts of debt, which is another big issue here in Nicaragua because interest rates are just crazy. You would have no idea how much we pay here on a regular loan on interest rate. So I take it day by day the same way that people is taking it day by day and to see the suffering present that particular day. Yes.
You can't do anything else. That's all you can do because you're overwhelmed with information and coming in. Your outreach fatigue is totally a thing. And you can't plan for the future because it's different. So all you can really do is take it day by day, right?
Exactly. I think you said it the best way. You cannot plan for the future because you don't know what tomorrow's going to be like. And these past 3 months have felt like 3 years because of the amount of things that can happen in one single day.
There's a saying out there that says sometimes a decade feels like a year and sometimes a year feels like a decade.
Yes. And 3 months have felt like three decades.
How has it affected your day-to-day? Do you still go about your day-to-day the same way that you did previously? Do you feel that the city is less safe where you live? How has it affected you?
So I would say there is not one person in Nicaragua whose life hasn't changed since April 18th. My day-to-day is very different from what it used to be 3 months ago. Even though we try to keep sane and try to maintain a mental health and try to keep a schedule, I think that the most savvy thing that you can do is to try to stay open and flexible. So we don't go out. I do go to the office. I go there early in the morning. And before April 18th, I could leave the office at 7 p.m., 7:30 or 8 if there was a lot of work to do. And now when it's 3:30 or 4 p.m., everyone's kind of like in a rush trying to get home because you just don't know what's going to happen at night. And because the police is not on our side, but on the government side. So seeing a cop on the streets, it's more frightening than the feeling of secureness that we're supposed to have. We don't go out on the weekends. And if you go out, you will basically go to have either breakfast or lunch. But like I said, after 3 or 4, everyone's just trying to get home. And it's also the combination of lack of security, but also because people are losing their jobs. So there's not a lot of money running the economy, you know, have the luxury to go eat someplace.
So this must be affecting all of the industries too. I mean, tourism, local restaurant owners and shops, probably not good right now.
Yes, everything. Every single industry has been affected. There's two major think tanks here in Nicaragua, and one of them that is more focused on economical development did a study a couple of weeks ago, and they are the ones who came up with the number of 215,000 jobs lost and millions of dollars that have been lost already, but that will continue to be lost if the government doesn't leave in the next couple of months in the different industries. And it's just major. Like, we were growing at a steady growth rate of between 4% and 5% for the past couple of years. And this year we're going to end up negative. So it's really, really major.
What financial savings options were available to people prior? So for example, in the US, we have the 401k, which is kind of the employer provided retirement plan. A lot of people use that, or more people should use it. But in our community, a lot of people are aware of that. Online banking, savings accounts, they can invest in the stock market. What options are available in Nicaragua, and what do most people take advantage of?
Unfortunately, not enough options and not enough people saving. We have 7 major banks, not major, but private banks. That's all we have. There's not like, you know, hundreds, if it's even thousands of banks in the States, you know, like small, medium and large. Like here we have 7 major banks and that's it. And most of them have the same products. I feel like they try not to compete amongst themselves. So even interest rates, both for savings account as for loans, they keep it the same so that, you know, there's no difference there. We do have a stock market, but it's very, very small. There's only, if I'm not mistaken, last time I saw, I think it was 13 or 17 companies on the stock market, and all of them were bonds. So you can't really buy shares. So everything's basically fixed market.
So do you find that people have changed their financial behavior? I mean, I can imagine if something like this were to happen in the US, you'd probably see everyone rush to banks to get their money out, be putting it under their mattresses and stock up with guns and other things. Like, is that sort of what's happening?
Yes, there's obviously a lot of fear in the financial system. And the other part is that we in Nicaragua went through a revolution in 79 and 80. In the 80s, and believe it or not, it was the same government. It was the same guy that's the president right now. And back then, there was a huge collapse on the financial and national system, and a lot of money was stolen. A lot of properties were stolen, and they were just basically given away to, you know, their friends and family. So people were very, and still are very, afraid of the financial system. Luckily, I do feel that we have more solid laws than, you know, 30, 40 years ago. And I feel that people's money is secure in the bank, but people are still afraid. So to give you an idea, the past 3 months since the crisis started, 10% of the national, international reserve at the central bank, which is like the Fed for you guys, has been taken out from the public's deposits.
Ouch.
Wow.
Yes.
So I know you have a podcast as well. And is that available on iTunes?
I do have a podcast. I started it with my husband, actually, a couple of months ago. It was actually last year. And right now we haven't been podcasting a lot because of what's, you know, going on in the country. We have to be very careful on what we say and what we don't say. It's not available on iTunes. It's only available on SoundCloud.
Oh, okay. What is it called?
It's called Ajá, Contame Más. I know it's very hard to say, but it basically means something like, really? Tell me more.
And it's in Spanish?
It's in Spanish,
yes.
It's
in Spanish. I can imagine that you choosing this as your job, this is probably a difficult time because you want to be very vocal and kind of be the pillar and help people at this time. But as you mentioned, there's a safety risk for you putting yourself out there too.
Yes. To be honest, I haven't really cared a lot on that front. It hasn't stopped me from writing and from saying what I think and from giving the people an honest advice. It has cost me followers, believe it or not. I see my Facebook, you were saying a couple of minutes ago, how I have 54,000 followers. And I see that number decreasing day by day because it's becoming more and more obvious which side of the balance I'm in. And so, yeah, it does cost you followers. But you also have to be careful, not only because of the government, but because the people themselves are so sensitive, I would say, with, you know, what's going on in the country, that if you're not talking about or posting something that's directly related to what's going on, they will feel like you're out of touch. You would think that in a crisis, you know, there's so much that you can say and do and help, but it's actually limited because even though every day is different, the crisis is only getting worse. So there's really so much that I can say.
Right. Definitely.
That makes sense.
It makes the more general financial advice, you know, stop buying lattes or whatever it is, seem extremely dumb in this context.
Exactly. I cannot say that anymore. I actually wrote a blog post last week on 55 ways to save more money during a crisis. And I had done a couple of blog posts around that subject before on our normal circumstances where I would talk about, you know, the latte or the car and all of that. And I actually asked my readers for their tips, and you would be amazed at the kinds of things that people are doing because they literally have no more money. So right now, and I think this is one of the big lessons that the crisis is leaving us, it's not a choice. It's not a matter of I choose to be frugal. I choose to spend less because I want to save, because I want to travel, because I want to do whatever. It's a matter of I have no choice. I can only not spend on all of the things that I was used to spending because I don't have the money to do it.
What are some of those things? Is there anything you could think of off the top of your head that was surprising that people are actually doing right now?
People, for example, selling their cars and using public transportation. And that might be normal in the States or Canada, but public transportation in Nicaragua is really, really tough to handle. We do have people who help around the house here in Nicaragua just because it's so cheap, like labor is so cheap. So people letting them go, people having to take their kids out of school or asking schools for a discount on what they pay, people buying less meat, less chicken, less, you know, everything, people disconnecting, you know, cables, internet, their cell phone plans. And there's also a lot of migration. That's the other thing. So we also see a lot of people who are selling literally everything, their lives to live. And because the rest of us who are staying here are in crisis, you can't really buy. And if you buy or if you sell something, then it's going to be dirt cheap. So even if you leave, you're going to leave with almost no money.
Where are people going when they're leaving?
If you have a U.S. visa, you're going to go to the U.S. If not, the other place that people migrate to a lot is Costa Rica, which is just down south Nicaragua.
So I think it's really interesting. This is part of where our education and our interests combine. Jay, you were a political science major in college, correct?
That I was.
And I was a political science minor in college. So we're both very interested in what's going on around the world and how politics shapes the world. So I know that I'm getting a lot of lessons out of this, and I would assume that you are as well, right, Jay?
Absolutely. And I think it's just interesting to broaden our perspective because we focus very much on the U.S. here. And occasionally we've thrown in, we have a Dutch person and we have two people from Canada, but we're just missing the whole rest of the globe. We love all of our listeners. I know we have an international cohort, so we thank you guys for joining. And this is just important that we put our heads up and we understand more than what's going on in the U.S.
Yeah, especially because so much of the world tends to be U.S.-centric and the news in the U.S., you have to look for international news about what's going on in the rest of the world because so often American journalists just only cover U.S. stuff and they don't even talk about the fact that there was a huge volcano and people were trapped and died. Like, it was just a little blip on the radar, but it was actually really big, important news. So I think this is a really amazing opportunity that we've gotten to be able to talk to you.
So what's your personal plan, Elena? Do you want to stay? Do you have plans? I know you travel to the U.S. for conferences, and we're really excited to see you again at FinCon in the fall. What's your plan?
So my plan for now is to stay in Nicaragua. My business, all revolving around personal finance, is obviously very, very low right now, and there's almost no sales at all. But the contract that I do maintain, let's say that I have enough to live basically. And I'm also pregnant. I'm 5 months pregnant. So it's not like I can go a lot of places right now. So my plan is to stay and hope that this all ends soon and that the economy starts to recover soon enough as well. I know it's going to take literally years for us to recover where we were because the last crisis that we had, like I said, in 79s and 80s, took us around 20 years to get over. So this is going to be a tough step to take. But unless something a lot worse than this happens and I feel forced to migrate, I would probably also look for the U.S. I mean, I can go there as a tourist. I'm not sure if I can ask for political asylum right now, but I guess that would be my choice because a lot of my family does live there. But for now, at least, I'm planning on staying back home.
Congratulations on your pregnancy.
Thank you.
Very exciting. Babies are wonderful.
They are.
So earlier in the episode, you mentioned something about interest rates. Are they generally higher or lower in Nicaragua?
They are a lot higher. Actually, interest rates here are, you know, super crazy. And we have something called loan sharks, which is people who will lend money, like individuals who will lend money to other individuals. And do you want to guess what the interest rate is? Take a guess.
It's like 20, 30%.
I'm going to say 17%. I don't know why the number just popped in my head.
Annually?
Yeah, like APR.
360%.
Oh. Well, all right then.
We are off by a magnitude of 10, Jay.
Oh, man. Yeah, we wouldn't be good prices, right, people? Wow, that's insane. So I guess at this point, people just don't borrow money because of that. And then it probably curbs investment and growth and things like that. Or are people doing it and they're just completely stuck?
Actually, people do it and they're completely stuck. So this is like the worst thing. I mean, I obviously went down the road, you know, with the worst possible scenario. But unfortunately, it's very common. And the poorer the people are and the less education they have, it's a lot more possible that they're going to go through a loan shark instead of through a bank. And I'm going to talk about what the bank rates are as well. But, you know, these loan sharks, when you said 30%, that's actually what they charge monthly. And the way that it works, let's say they lend me $1,000. What they tell me is, okay, here's your $1,000, and you're going to pay me $300 monthly, only on interest, until you pay me the principal. So, obviously, after 4 months, I have repaid you back, and you even have a gain on that, but I'm still stuck with my principal. And so people end up paying a lot of money on this, and sometimes they're not even able to get out. Above this, I would say, we have other financial institutions that are not banks that will lend money. And basically, they lend at a rate between 60 and 80% annually.
Ugh, that is insane.
Wow.
And above that, we have credit cards. So there's different, you know, rates, obviously, for credit cards. But the most common one I mentioned before that I feel like banks here don't really want to compete. I've read a lot of personal finance books, you know, from U.S. authors, and they always recommend that you compare and that you negotiate and that you tell them that this bank is giving you this so that they're going to lower. That doesn't work here because they don't care because they already have an agreement on what they're going to charge. The most basic regular credit card here for every single person whose income is less than $3,000, which means 95% of the population in Nicaragua, is between 49% and 50% annually. And if you want a personal loan from the bank, it's going to cost you anywhere from 15% if you're like a super customer and 25%. You want to buy a car, it's around 10% annually. You want to buy a house, that's the cheapest one, around 8 or 9%.
Yikes. Yeah, we have loan sharks in the U.S. as well, although those are more like behind the scenes, shady alley deals. Those aren't supposed to be around, but there are. And then we have payday loan places that charge rates that I thought were ridiculous that are actually capped by law. I think they lowered it recently, and I don't know what it is. Jay, do you know off the top of your head what the interest rate for payday loans is?
I don't, but I'm learning more about different money options because I'm reading a book on blockchain and Bitcoin. And this book is saying that Bitcoin is going to revolutionize all of that and like help people who are unbanked right now or people who use payday loan facilities or people who send money in like kiosks to family members abroad. It's going to revolutionize the entire thing.
So I just looked it up and it's about 300%. From a payday lender in the US, it equals out to be about 300%.
Wow, that's crazy. Wow.
And people that get trapped into payday loans in America, they can't get out of them either.
No, but at least they're not going through what is going on right now.
But at least we have a somewhat stable society at the moment.
Yes.
So Elena, thank you so much for coming on today and sharing your story. If listeners want to follow you, learn more about you, where can they find you?
Oh, thank you. Thank you guys for having me and for sharing what's going on here in Nicaragua. They can follow me through Twitter. It's at Elamvela. It's Elamveli. And on Facebook, you can find me as Plata con Plática. It's also very hard, I know.
We will link to it in the show notes. Definitely. And while we have you, are there any resources that you recommend if people listening want to learn more about what's going on? Are there any good resources that they can follow up on?
Unfortunately, there's not a lot being said internationally, but just a couple of days ago, I saw a very good article by the BBC, and it was very complete if you want to see. But also, I guess that if you Google Nicaragua crisis April, I'm sure you're going to get something.
Okay, and we'll try to track down the BBC article and link to it. All right, our last question. Gwen, are you ready?
I am. Okay, so Elena, what is your wildest dream?
That's a very good question. But I wish I could live from anywhere I wanted and that I could travel and blog at the same time. And I know that a lot of people do this, but, you know, when you come from a country like Nicaragua, when even just, you know, blogging, it's a big challenge and nobody really does it. Then, you know, going the other way sounds like very, very hard to do, but that would be my major dream.
I love it.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
I hope that you get it. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, girls.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. Go to our website, firedrillpodcast.com, to continue the discussion and get the link to our private Facebook group.
If you like us, leave us a review on iTunes. If you're like me, you have no idea how to do that. So, in the podcast app or in iTunes, search for Fire Drill Podcast, find it, click the Reviews tab, and write something to make my mother proud of me. We read every single review and want to say thank you from the bottom of our hearts for making this podcast possible.